thoughts on it.
Hey everyone, just taking a quick 15 seconds to let you know that my new book, The Fitness Mindset, Eat for Energy, Train for Tension, Manage Your Mindset, and Reap the Results, which hit the bestseller list within 24 hours of its release, is now available to buy on Amazon. So if you're looking for everything you need to get into incredible shape and the mindset to keep it forever, be sure to check it out. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy this week's episode.
Welcome to Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where we talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset. With your host, Brian Keane.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast. We talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset to help you with your goals. Today's episode is a Q&A, and I pulled the questions across my social media platforms. So, Brian Keane Fitness on Facebook and Instagram, and BrianK019 on Snapchat. So if you're not following me on those platforms, definitely check them out. Instagram and Snapchat are probably my most two active platforms at the minute. So definitely check both those out. BrianK019 on Snapchat, which I'm still loving. And I'm putting a lot on Instagram at the minute too, which is Brian Keane Fitness. Okay, so first question comes in from Bora Hunter on Facebook Live. Hey Brian, what are your thoughts on coffee before workouts to boost energy? Okay, I have two trains of thought on this. In terms of coffee and caffeine is the reason that coffee is so effective on your central nervous system. It's why it gives you so much energy. Caffeine is probably alongside creatine monohydrate, the most scientifically backed supplement on the market and has been shown time and time again to improve athletic performance, to improve concentration, and to improve your body's ability to push past thresholds in workouts. It's why athletes use it at all different levels. It's why gym goers use it. It's why it's in most fat burners, can also work as a mild appetite suppressant. And it's why it's in most pre-workouts. If you look at any pre-workout supplement, normally the first ingredient is some form of caffeine. And that's the reason for it is because it works. It 100%, if you're someone that responds to caffeine, it's going to give you a kick in your workouts. Now, there are certain people who don't have that are quite caffeine insensitive. They can drink cups and cups of coffee and nothing really happens to them. You can also burn out your beta 1 receptor, which is where your caffeine runs off. So if you drink way too much coffee, you end up, or take way too much caffeine, you build up that tolerance. So you need more and more and more to get the same hit. It's the reason why the first time you took a cup of coffee, or the first time you took a pre-workout, or the first time you took any stimulated drink, you felt wired to the moon, your brain was going crazy and you had loads of energy. And now you may take that same amount of coffee, or may same amount of stimulated drink, and it barely keeps you awake. That's down to running off that beta 1 receptor. You can blow out that receptor, or you can maximize that receptor so that your body it fills it up basically, and it doesn't have the same impact on your body. That's why it's probably worth anyone that cycles caffeine or pre-workouts or fat burners or whatever it is you're using to come on and off caffeine so that you get the hit every time you use it. And it's why people also have withdrawals when they give up coffee. I know myself, and I'm a big coffee drinker, even though I have it scaled back now to like one a day. But there was a time when I was drinking 3 or 4 cups every day. When I scaled back first, I got really, really bad headaches. My body was really tired. My brain just wasn't functioning the same for about 10 days, 2 weeks after. And there is a great hack that I use, and I use this with a lot of clients that come through my BKF online program that are trying to minimize their caffeine, or else people that are trying to deload at the end of the program so that they can have the hit again for phase 2. I drink Dandy Blend, which is like a dandelion tea, which mimics and isn't just completely dissimilar taste to caffeine. So I use that alongside some caprylic acid, which is brain octane oil, which is a medium chain triglyceride, which basically means you'll get a hit of ketone release in your brain. So that fogginess you get when you come off your coffee or come off your caffeine, you can take that, and it will mean that your brain won't go as brain dead as what normally happens when you cut off caffeine. And it also means that you just give your adrenals and everything a chance to re-stimulate to get them back functioning properly. And a lot of people get a lot of adrenal fatigue, which means you're like chronically tired and you can't sleep properly. And then you're using more caffeine and more stimulants to try and propel yourself through the day. And it has that knock-on effect that the half-life of caffeine is going to stay in your system. So if you drink your coffee at, you know, 12 o'clock in the day, there's still going to be some of that caffeine in your system at 8, 9 p.m. in the evening when you're trying to wind down, and it can affect your ability to fall into a deep REM rapid eye movement sleep, and then it leaves you don't sleep well, and you wake up the next morning, need a coffee to get going, and the cycle continues. So any of you that have read my book, the Fitness Mindset, the best-selling book on Amazon, you've seen where I talked about the ability with caffeine and how to use it positively and how to use it, it can be used negatively. However, if you're just using caffeine to get energy, it's a sign there's something off elsewhere in your lifestyle and your nutrition. As a sports supplement to give you energy before a workout, it's been proven time and time again to work tremendously well, and I'm a massive fan of it myself. It's probably my go-to energy supplement. However, if you're using it because you need it, as opposed to move your energy level from an 8 to a 9 or a 9 to a 10, it's a sign that your lifestyle is off in terms of you're probably not sleeping properly and recovering properly, or your nutrition isn't right, and you should be getting some of your energy from food, and you're just plastering over the problem. And I do see, the only reason I can see this so easily in people is because I was a victim of it myself, that when you cut your calories and you're not eating enough food, or you're not eating the right foods, and you're using stimulants and you're using caffeine, you're using coffee, and you're using pre-workouts, or you're using fat burners to get through your workouts or get through your day, that's a sign there's something off in your body or your lifestyle or your nutrition somewhere. So what I would do there is I would go back, I would make sure you fix that, your nutrition is good with clean foods, you're balancing out your meals so your energy levels are stable through the day, you're getting a good night's sleep every night, that you're waking up refreshed in the morning, and then you're using your coffee before you train to move you from a 9 to a 10 or an 8 to a 9 or an 8 to a 10 in terms of energy levels, and then that's what maximizes performance in the gym. So it gives you the best of both worlds. So that's my kind of two trains of thought on caffeine. I think it's an incredible supplement. It's one of the ones I mentioned in my book in terms of for fat loss and for performance. I think it's been so scientifically researched. I've tried it myself and I'm a massive fan. And if you're someone who responds and you're caffeine sensitive, it can give you a great hit before workouts. Also, we are on the side of caution. If you're someone that has a lot of anxiety, a lot of worry, and it does send your body into a sympathetic state of fight or flight. That's why it works so effectively at like releasing glucose from the cell, elevating cortisol, which is what you want before you train, because it'll give you a better workout. However, you don't want that chronically during the day, because that leads to the figures of death by 1,000 cuts, which is stress and too much cortisol, and caffeine can constantly stimulate that. It's why people that drink it all through the day find that their anxiety is through the roof, because you're constantly stimulating your sympathetic nervous system and your body's in a constant state of fight or flight, and that over a long period of time can be detrimental for your health, for your energy levels, and for your physique in general. Okay, next question comes in from Shauna Baxter on Facebook. Any tips on how to control nerves before a match? Okay, so I'm going to approach this one just to try and give value to everybody that's listening, because the nerves you get before a match are very similar to that before you get before a job interview, before a first date, before some social outings for people that are a little bit more introverted. Again, it's something that I used to get really badly myself. So I'm going to approach it from a couple of different angles to try and give everybody value on this answer. The truth is, a buildup of nerves, again, can come down to a couple of different factors. One, it can be just your personality type, and you have people that are going to be more wired to worry and a bit more prone to anxiety before events, before matches, before first dates, or whatever it is that nerve shows up for you. For other people, it can be stimulated by having too much caffeine, like mentioned in the last answer, having too much caffeine, too many stimulants, not having your diet right, too many processed foods that are sending your body into a state of fight or flight. All of these things can make anxiety and nerves way, way worse, and then it just hits a climax when it actually comes to an event. So again, it's very important to understand where the nerves and why the nerves are showing up for you. However, there's a couple of tips that can work really, really well for a lot of people. What I have found very effective for me is making sure that you've prepared in advance prior to the match, or you've thought the process through prior to your date or prior to your interview. And I live by the adage that if you fail to plan, plan to fail. And what can happen when you're coming into a game, if you haven't done the work on the back end, you haven't been doing the gym work, you haven't been doing the conditioning work that you need, you haven't got your fitness level to where it needs to be, your skill set from training isn't good, you've missed training sessions with your club or with your county or whatever it is, that can show up in nerves by being not prepared. I know myself, the times when I go to job interviews or I have matches, the only time I ever felt those unbelievable well up of nerves when I was like, okay, I haven't prepared as well as I should have for this. Because the truth is, when you can look across at the person that you're marking, or you can look across at a job interview board, and you're literally like, I've worked harder than anybody else to be here, a confidence comes with that, and that confidence tends to translate into your performance, whatever that looks like. The same thing can be used for a date. One of the things that I asked myself, and I used to get really, really, really bad anxiety before first dates. It's something that I've really had to deal with over the last couple of years, and I'm a lot stronger with now in terms of my social outings and things like that. But it's something that I really, really struggled with when I lived in London, to the point that I would actually get physically sick. And I would cancel the date because I was so nervous, and it would show up and I would have IBS and my stomach would get sore, I would get headaches, and all these ways it showed up. I didn't know at the time that's what it was, but it was nerves and anxiety that was propelling that and driving me to a state of absolute sheer panic, into mild panic attacks. So what I did that really, really helped was literally getting inside your own head. Tony Robbins has a quote, when you get in your head, you're dead. And what would happen is I would think through the entire first date and all the things that could go wrong, and I'd work myself up into a frenzy, and then my nerves would just culminate in me feeling physically sick. And what I've started doing now, and this works for all aspects of life, this includes when I go for appearances, social outings, and thankfully that side of my life I've largely dealt with, and I've talked about in the anxiety section of my book and the things that I used and how I was able to pick the triggers and move out the other side from it. But what helps me a lot now is asking, what is the worst case scenario? What is the worst possible thing that could happen if I go on this date or I go to this event or I meet this person? And the truth is, 99 out of 100 times, and probably 9,999 out of 10,000 times, you're going to come back with the answer, well, I may lose an hour, you know, and the best case scenario is weighing up the positive and the pro side. You may meet the person you spend the rest of your life with. You may meet your next best friend. You may have the best business opportunity that skyrockets you to the next level. You don't know what happens in these situations. And I'm a big believer in force and serendipity. I do believe in luck to a degree. I believe I was lucky that I was born to have the mum that I have. I believe that I was lucky to be born in an age when the internet allows you to have access to thousands of people. I think that's all luck, but I do believe in force and serendipity. By putting yourself into positions, like if you're somebody that's single and thinking you're never going to meet anybody, put yourself into the positions where those people that you could meet possibly are, and then you may force that serendipity. You know, I love the, again, this was something that I came to terms with myself a couple of years ago when I wanted to build my business. I was like, well, how do I get better at business? Well, the truth is you go to where good business people are and you connect with those. You know, you want to meet a boyfriend or a girlfriend, go to where the good ones are. You know, work off probabilities. The truth is, if you're somebody that wants to settle down and have a life partner and have a family, it's very unlikely, and the probability is a lot lower, you're going to meet them in a club at 4 a.m. every Friday night. You know, it's more chance that you'll meet them, you know, in a coffee shop. You know, it's more chance you'll meet them at a restaurant or at a friend's party. You may, and there are people that will meet their life partners at 4 a.m. in a club, stumbling out drunk, and they do, you know, but the probability is lower. So put yourself in a place where your probability is high that you're going to set yourself up for success. And then ask yourself the question, what is the worst thing that could happen in this situation? Because 99 out of 100 times and even more, it's normally just that you've maybe wasted an hour. And if anything, if you reframe that and realize that failure is just one other way that didn't work, and it gives you direct feedback on what you're not looking for, you can use that to propel you forward. Everything you've been through in your life, all the terrible games you've had, all the worst job interviews you went to, all the horrible first dates or terrible relationships you've been in are direct feedback on what not to do next time. And then you can use that information to move forward and become a better version of you. That's, and all that is a reframe. When you start to get in your head, you're dead. And when you start to think that failure is this thing that, oh, well, that happens, I failed, it's not gonna work, I'm never gonna be a good footballer, or I'm never going to meet the right person, or I'm never gonna be good at job interviews, or I'm never gonna have the job that I love or the career that I thrive to build my life around. If you get in your head around that, then you're never going to achieve it, because that's the story you've told yourself. When you reframe that as everything is a step forward and feedback on what may work better next time, then you can use that information to become the best version of you. So when you add those together and you go into a match and you have those nerves, again, in the context to bring it back to the original question, if you've prepared and you've used the probabilities of doing all the things that are going to set you up so you're physically in the right space for that game, and you tell yourself that even the worst case scenario is I have the worst game of my life and I know exactly where I need to improve. If your person bets you off the mark to every ball, you aren't fast enough in your sprint. You aren't fast enough in your takeoff. So you may need to go back to the gym and do some direct glute work to get your glutes firing faster so that it translates to you being quicker on the pitch. If you are muscled off the ball because you weren't able to hold it from upper body strength, you know you need to go back into the gym, or you need to have resistance training at work where you're working for compound lifts, so you're building up your central nervous system strength so that you're able to hold the ball and break through tackles. those poor games and the worst case scenarios, the worst game you ever have, is direct feedback on where you need to improve. The top sports people in the world, the top GAA players, the top professional athletes, are people that have used those bad games to as feedback on where to improve. You know, you look at Michael Jordan in his book, The Life, or you look at Kobe Bryant, who was one of the top NBA guys, and regardless of what you want to say about his personal life, those guys outworked everybody else. In the summer when their teammates used to go on holidays, they were working on their left hand. They were working on their right hand. They were working on the weak parts of their game because they showed up in the season when they had poorer performances and they worked in the off season to make it better. The only difference between the good and the great is what you do in the off season as an athlete. And that translates into all aspects of life. Using your failure as feedback to propel you forward on what you want to achieve, what you want to do, and where you can be better can minimize nerves to the highest degree. And that's speaking from someone that's been through it, who's gone through that anxiety stage, who's dealt with nerves and came out strongly the other side. Okay, next question from David Kennedy 10 on Instagram. Will lifting weights stunt your growth? Okay, short answer, no. There's been no scientific research to suggest that it does. Long answer, the reason that that little bit of a misconception is in the fitness industry is down to the fact that what happens when younger players, 15, 16, 17 even, athletes start lifting weights and they're still growing, you start loading that muscle that's still growing and the bone, and obviously the bone, tendon, ligaments that are still growing, and you start loading those with extra resistance, you're at a higher risk of injury than somebody that's fully grown. So the biggest issue with somebody who's younger, who's afraid that it's going to stunt their growth, it's going to be down to the fact that you're at a very, very high risk of injury if you do the movements and add extra resistance to your body, which is weight training effectively. When you add extra resistance to your body and you start doing certain movement patterns while you're still growing, you're at a high risk of tearing, basically tearing ligaments, tearing tendons, having all these injuries that can come with it. So the most important thing to any young athlete that's listening to this, or anybody that has children that want to lift weights, the truth is it's not going to stunt their growth. Now, I'm not the best exception. I'm not tall. I'm like 5'8", maybe 5'9" in heels. The truth is there's no scientific study to show that weight training stunts growth, but there has been a lot to show that it can negatively affect your actual injury. Now, I'm not the best person to ask. I'm not tall. I'm 5'8", 5'9" in heels maybe. But the truth is there's been no scientific research to show that weight training stunts growth. However, you are going to be at a very high risk of injury if you do those movements incorrectly. And what can happen with some people is if they're loading the muscle and doing squats or deadlifts or bench press or whatever movement, military press, compound lifts, which is the ones you should probably be focusing on at 16, 17, 18, if you are doing weights, it's going to be the increased risk of doing the movement incorrectly and then the muscle developing wrong, so you end up slouched or you end up with poor posture, which again may look like your height has been affected, when the truth is just you've thrown your muscular system out of balance by loading with extra resistance while you were growing in an incorrect way. So my advice to anybody in that area with that age group, or children that want to lift weights that are 14, 15, 16, even though I don't think you need to touch your weight until 16, 17, 18 even, even though if you are doing them correctly is going to be crucial, is either one of two things. Either get onto an online program that has the exact video movement patterns being showed so that you're able to do it correctly, or even better, get an experienced coach or a trainer or someone who's very reputable in their field to take you through a session on how to do a squat correctly, how to do a deadlift correctly, how to do a military press correctly, how to do the movements correctly, so that at least if you are loading your muscle at 16, 17 or 18 under that resistance, you're doing it with perfect form. That's not going to have any effect on your growth, and it won't have any effect on your injury, provided that you're doing it properly and you're recovering on the other side with your nutrition, you're sleeping properly, and you're doing all these other things that are going to improve muscular recovery. So short answer is no, it won't affect your growth. There's been nothing shown to show that I've seen. Long answer is it has other negative effects if done incorrectly, but it can also have positive effects if done correctly. So my advice would be is to get somebody to show you or get onto a program where all the videos are there so you can see exactly how those movements should be performed in the correct way so you don't increase your risk of injury. Okay, question from Snapchat. Hey Brian, what would you do if you weren't in fitness? Okay, this is a funny one. This question got asked on my episode as well with Rob Lipset. This actually came in as a question from me and Rob, but because Rob was obviously the guest on the show, I wanted to get his experience on it. And he talked about how he'd probably be in PR or something along those lines. The truth is, for me, I would probably still be a teacher. I've talked about it in other podcast episodes before, and for those of you, I know a lot of you are new into my ecosystem. My book went bestseller on Amazon, sold thousands and thousands of copies. So I know a lot of you have just fed into the podcast now, so maybe you don't know my backstory. But I was a primary school teacher for 4 years. And the truth is, if I didn't go into fitness and didn't make that jump, I probably would have stayed in that job. The reality was, I enjoyed teaching. I loved working with my kids. And I know it's funny, because a lot of my kids, because I was a fifth class teacher for 2 years, a lot of those kids I worked with now are 14, 15, 16, some of them. And they've messaged me since, and they're like, I follow your stuff. Thank you so much. So it's so cool to hear from some of them. I really enjoyed teaching. I didn't like the paperwork that came with the English system. I didn't like the longer hours. I didn't like the tracking that was done. I thought it minimized the effect of teaching. And that got brought into the Irish system for anyone that's a primary school teacher. There's a lot more tracking and monitoring now, working through levels, which actually I personally think has a negative effect on the teaching experience for the children. Again, that's just personal opinion. But the truth is, I would have stayed as a teacher. I did really like my job. I loved my school that I was in when I left. I loved the staff, I loved the kids, I loved the parents, and it was just a case that fitness was my calling, fitness was my passion. What I do now, my podcast, my Snapchat Q&As, my Facebook Lives, the book that I write, and all the other things I do, I would do for free. You know, I use the 10 million in the bank account analogy for a lot of people. I'm like, what would you do if you had 10 million euro in your bank account? And when you can answer, you would keep doing the same thing, you're winning. You found what it is you're meant to do. And I can honestly say that to myself, that if I had 10 million in my bank account, everything I'm doing now, I'd still be doing. You know, I'd have more of a team, and I would have more people handling things like my emails and stuff like that get inundated. But all the videos, all the podcasts, all the Snapchats, all the speaking engagements, the books, all of that, I would continue doing, because it's what I love to do. And if I didn't have that as an option, I probably would have stayed teaching, and I would have done a bit of fitness on the side. I probably would have competed longer than I did. I probably would have doubled down on more sport and more GA because of the, again, my time at the minute and traveling back and forth to different countries and to events. I can't play as much as I want to play. And when I was competing, it was difficult to travel the world. After that 2 year mark when Holly was born, I probably would have done a lot more of that as kind of my outlet and my own personal thing, where the truth is now it's very, very similar, and they're, once they're integrated, I have what I call a non-job, where my life and my job are one and the same, and I'm in a very sense of gratitude and very thankful to have that I don't know what day it is. You know, I knew when I was teaching that Sunday I was getting up for work on Monday, and I knew on Friday I was off for the weekend, and I was planning my weekend for my 2 days off. I love Picasso's dichotomy, where he speaks about that you shouldn't spend 5 of your 7 days working to spend the 2 days doing what you love. If there's any way that you can merge that and do what you love on all of those days where you don't know what day it is, that is my vision of success. And again, success is subjective to each person. I have it written on my whiteboard at home. Success for me is never having to worry about paying bills. Success for me is being able to spend time with my daughter at any stage, at any time during the day, and where I can just take an hour off or take 2 hours off and go play with Holly. They are my visions of success. So my advice would be is to find what your success looks like, write it down, and then do everything to build your life around that, and set your bar that you can achieve it. You know, if your success is, I make 10 million every year, and I never make any mistakes with my partner or with my kids, you know, if you set that bar too high, you're setting yourself up to fail straight away. You know, I know people that will literally wake up in the morning and go, ah, amazing, I have a successful day. It's like, why? Well, it's like, I get to wake up today, you know? And there's people that live their life like that. When you set the bar with something you can achieve, that makes you so much happier in everything that you do in your life, because nearly every single day I hit that. You know, when I'm not worrying about bills and I get to spend time with my daughter, I get to do that 99% of the time, and that sets up success for me. And then everything I do with helping other people, serving other people, getting to make videos, getting to make podcasts, getting to do all of these things that I'm doing and helping other people, that all lends to me being more grateful, and it feeds into that cycle. Teaching didn't give me that, even though I loved working with my kids. But my job now, or my non-job now, or what I do now gives me that. But the reality is, if I didn't have this, I would have stayed teaching, and I would have got an outlet elsewhere. So that's kind of my personal bit on that. Okay, so a range of questions in this one. Hopefully you guys got a lot of value from this. If you ever want to send me an episode or a question for the podcast, make sure you follow my social media. My Facebook and Instagram are both Brian Keane Fitness, and my Snapchat's BrianK019. I'm really, really active on those platforms at the minute. I try and get an Instagram and Facebook live in as many times during the week as I can. I open up my Snapchat every day, Monday to Friday, for Q&As back and forth. So make sure you're catching me on there. And any questions you ever want to send into the podcast, you'll get me on there. So again, hope you got loads of value from this. A massive thank you again to everyone who's shared, rated, and told their friends about the podcast. Like, when I see the numbers on the podcast downloads, 50, 60, 70,000 downloads a month, is absolutely crazy to me. So a massive thank you for everyone that's told their friends and that has linked it on their social media or tagged me on Instagram in their stories. It's so awesome to see. So thank you all so much. And a massive thank you to Conor McVartonic, who puts together all my podcast episodes. Thanks for listening. Catch you all soon.